Candace Lim.
And I'm Rachel Hampton, and you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture. And Candace, I've got a story for you.
Ooh, do tell.
Okay, last time I gave a celebrity story, it was Bradley Cooper failing upwards at the New York Philharmonic.
Yeah, this one
is, I would say, even more fascinating. As both you and longtime listeners of the show know, I have un petit crush on one, Jeremy Strong. I'm not proud of it. But the heart wants what the heart wants, and my heart wants that deeply earnest man. But you know this, our listeners know this, and my best friends know this, including one who is a culture editor for The New Yorker, and as a result, gets tickets to literally every show in town, including the revival of Henrik Ibsen's 1882 play, The Enemy of the People, that's currently on Broadway, starring one Jeremy Strong. So I'm the kind of person who, if I can, I prefer to go into something blind. I don't want to know the plot. I don't want to know what people are saying. I want to be in the moment as the theater gods demand, which is to say, I walked into the theater, I was handed my playbill, and I found out what the play was about.
Okay.
So Jeremy Strong plays a doctor in a small town that has recently opened like a bathhouse spa sort of thing that's taken many years and a lot of money to build. We're also somewhere in the past, I would say comfortably turn of the century of like from 1800s to 1900s. And we're also somewhere in Europe. On the eve of the bathhouse's opening, this doctor discovers that the water source that the bathhouses rely on is full of microorganisms that are making people sick. They are just learning about the concept of bacteria. So people are getting like typhoid sick. It's not a chill cold. And our guy, Jeremy Strong, is like, thank God I discovered this fact before catastrophe struck. I'm going to tell my brother, played by Michael Imperioli of White Lotus, of The Sopranos, and we're going to solve the problem. But turns out that solving this problem requires not only an exorbitant amount of money, but shutting down these bathhouses for 2 years, both of which would economically devastate the town. You might say a mass poisoning of people would also economically and reputationally destroy the town, but no one's thinking about that because everyone, meaning all the power brokers in the town, from the editor of the local newspaper to the guy who owns the printing press to the mayor, all agree that there's no proof that the water is poison. It's all scientific conjecture. There's literally this bit that's like, you're saying there are small animals in the water? What the fuck are you talking about, you crazy person? And we're all like, ee-hee-hee-hee-hee, microorganisms, we all know bacteria is real. But all these people say there is proof that fixing this hypothetical problem you warn us of will cost a lot of time and money, and so they all endeavor to silence Jeremy Strong. Obviously, the themes of this play have some modern-day parallels to something like, say, climate change, correct?
Oh, yeah, it's kind of like when people were testing the waters for COVID, yeah?
Exactly. Wastewater analysis, we're all like, hey, maybe we should pay attention to the science. And meanwhile, all of the people in power are like, that sounds really expensive and inconvenient. Some might call it an inconvenient truth. So I'm watching this play, right? Sitting right dead square in front of Jeremy Strong, who is talking directly to me. Not really, but I am having the time of my life, okay? It's one of the best birthday gifts I've ever gotten, not least because for some reason, Amy Herzog, who adapted this play, decided that there didn't need to be an intermission, but there did need to be a shot break.
Oh.
Halfway through the play, the lights came up and the time you normally take to pee was instead taken by the stage being transformed into a bar and stagehands started passing out shots. So I'm having the time of my life. I'm like a little bit buzzed because I got a shot during intermission on an empty stomach. The lights go down. The play resumes. Jeremy Strong's addressing the town hall when someone in the audience stands up and says, there's no theater on a dying planet. And we have audio of this because someone recorded it.
This play doesn't end when you leave the theater.
She's right.
This play doesn't end when you leave the theater.
She's not right.
He's right.
It's all lies.
Don't let them speculate.
Okay, so I'm seeing this clip. There's like a woman in like a white t-shirt and leggings. She's loudly proclaiming some thoughts. The funniest thing is that she's like saying stuff. And then Jeremy Strong says, she's right. And then someone goes, she's not. And he goes, she's right. Like he was responding to her.
Yes, in character. And Michael Imperioli jumped in. So that's the voice you hear saying, she's not. That's the mayor saying she's not. Ignore her.
Not a three-way improv. Oh my. Okay. Well, I also need to acknowledge something. I'm scrubbing through this video and Rachel, is this you in the audience in this video?
It is, because I was so close to the stage that I ended up in this video. You can see me like 10 seconds in with my head tilted watching all of this go down. And I'm thinking to myself, self, I say, what an interesting way to stage this production and make it relevant for 2024, right? Because we're watching these characters try to silence this doctor because they don't want to be made uncomfortable by the facts he's presenting. And here we are cozy in our little theater being made uncomfortable by the facts of a climate crisis that is going on as we speak.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So there are three protesters, and as soon as one is removed, another one starts speaking. And again, both Jeremy Strong and Michael Imperioli stay in character the whole time. But then as each protester gets removed, the audience starts cheering louder for each removal. And I'm like, huh, interesting. If this isn't part of the play, then I'm pretty sure the audience doesn't understand the play that they're watching, but that would be crazy. Yeah. It has to be part of the play. Candace! The play ends, we walk out and hear someone talking to a security guard who confirms the protests were indeed not a part of the play. Oh. And I had two thoughts. One, my God, I am surrounded by either dumb people or fascists, because how can you watch a play about a man whose life is ruined for telling the truth about an impending ecological disaster and cheer when the climate crisis protester gets removed? And two, Jeremy Strong and Michael Imperioli, they put their whole pussy into this. They're incredible actors to just roll with that and to basically make it part of the text of the play.
I mean, this is maybe the one moment where it's like Jeremy Strong being method might have helped him, because now he's one of those people that are being like, this protest is now canonical. It's in the text. I made it text.
Exactly. I have to say, this episode that I had a few weeks ago, wild. This episode that we're about to talk about, also kind of wild, because you had a very fun and intriguing conversation about knitting.
And crocheting. So Morgan Sung is an ICY My Fave who has been on the show before to talk to you about her browser history as like an internet culture reporter. But on today's show, we are talking about her love for craft Reddit, because it sounds like there's a lot of discourse, controversy, scandal happening in the online communities of the fiber arts. So I will be back with Morgan to talk about acrylic versus natural yarn after a short break. Hey there. If you love our podcast, then maybe you should consider subscribing to Slate Plus. With Slate Plus, there are no ads on any Slate podcasts. And Slate Plus helps keep this podcast going, because this show would not be possible without your support. With Slate Plus, you'll get bonus segments and episodes for shows like Amicus, Political Gap Fest, Culture Gap Fest. You'll also never hit a paywall on the Slate website, meaning you get access to every article and every advice column. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That's slate.com/ICYMI+. And we're back. Joining me today is someone you might have already heard on the show before. She's an internet culture reporter and a big crafter. It's Morgan Sung. Hello, Morgan.
Hi.
The last time you were on the show was back in 2022. You and Rachel actually talked about Avatar The Last Airbender fan fiction, conspiracy theories, and whether Jesus Christ was canonically hot. I would like to remind the audience at home that you said he was, quote, ugly hot. Do you still agree? Do you need to retract that or anything?
I still stand by that. If anything, I think I'm doubling down on that. I think Jesus Christ was a short king.
Oh, I like this. I'm so glad you were able to correct the record. But today, you're back on the show because we are talking about the drama-filled, scandal-laden world of knitting and crocheting Reddit. I mean, before we dive into the specific scandals that have racked these communities, can I ask about your own relationship to yarn life? Like, do you knit? Do you crochet? Why did you pick it up?
Yeah. Okay. So I learned how to knit when I was like 6 or 7 because my grandma was like a very avid knitter. Actually, both my grandmas were big crafters. Like my mom's mom was like a seamstress and, you know, really into sewing. Granted, she did like basically work in a sweatshop, but then when she retired was like, you know, constantly like making us clothes and like little purses and like beading stuff. So there's crafting on that side. And then my dad's mom was also like a big knitter. So she would always like make us scarves and hats and, you know, fun stuff for Christmas and all that. So I learned how to knit from her, from my dad's mom. And then I, you know, was kind of terrible at it. I picked it up again in high school when my friends and I started Stitch and Bitch. And we just like hang out, knit and crochet and like bitch and like, you know, knit during class, whatever. And then I did it a little in college and then the pandemic rolled around. So I was at home during quarantine. I was stuck in all these Zoom calls. I have ADHD, so I'm always like doing something with my hands. And I learned how to crochet because I needed like a good fidget. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to like learn to crochet. And I had so much free time. I got really into it because my sister and I were quarantining together and she also crochets. So we would just like sit on the couch and crochet and quarantine. And last year I got back into knitting.
So I am a crocheter. I started also in the pandemic. You know, you're at home, you're just spending so much time watching TV, but you're like, I don't want to do TV and my phone.
Yeah.
I do love it. It is very therapeutic,
yeah.
Actually kind of cyclically grounding because in a weirdly similar way, I started crocheting and I like brought it up to my mom. I was like, oh, mom, I have to crochet this scarf right now. And she was like, well, I actually learned how to crochet in high school. Can I show you? And girly was going so fast. And I was like, oh, my God, you're like a master crocheter. And then it became this conversation about how our family in Taiwan literally lived in a factory town where they were making ceramics. And I was like, oh, there is like lineage here that I never knew of that only came about because of the yarn goddess possessing my body. And so I kind of love that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like there is some sort of like generational like connection here and like, you know, our grandparents' generation having to craft for survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we are having this conversation because you recently tweeted, quote, "Someone let me cover crochet/knitting discourse. These girls are always fighting over yarn. Damn. And I would love to know more, like which communities were you specifically talking about? Where is the discourse happening? Could you maybe describe the vibe of each?
There's the classic like TikTok, Instagram, like knitfluencers and crochet creators always feuding. And then the real juice, the real drama is in the Ravelry forums, the Ravelry threads, and then also like the knitting crafting subreddits. I am a big fan of Craft Snark because that's like people are always bitching about something on Craft Snark. And then there's another one called Hobby Drama. Both of those have been just really fun to like engage in because I feel like so much of my job is covering like internet culture and like, you know, having to be so extremely online. And I feel like this is a space that's very online that you wouldn't expect to be very online.
Yeah.
That is also just like rife with drama, but it's all completely inconsequential, you know? And I think I relish in that because a part of the reason why I picked up like knitting and crocheting again is because I had a terrifying screen time. And I was like, okay, at the end of the day, I need to like go brain off, turn on the TV and just like not scroll. So I feel like this is just a fun way to engage that like need to be online without actually having to be online.
I mean, you're hitting on so many resonant things there. The first one being, I think the reason I did not get into crocheting earlier is because I always thought of yarn crafts as like a retired people game. But the other side of it is that maybe yarn crafts are the opposite of the internet, where it's like, I am not really performing this for anyone. This is a solo activity unto which I sit here and I use my hands to create something for me. So I think it's a good time to maybe talk about the specific communities that you've dived into. One is a subreddit called Fiber Arts Circle Jerk. Now, this title is a little abrasive, but don't worry, guys. The description that this subreddit has written for themselves is that they are, quote, making fun of fiber arts people, including ourselves, since circa 1714. Now, a subreddit that you do love called Craft Snark. This is just from like a very basic peruse, but I'm getting the vibe that Craft Snark is like where the real haters are at, because not only do they describe themselves as a sub, quote, focused on craft industry snark, drama, news and gossip, critiques of monetized craft influencers, and discussions of social issues in the craft industry, but their tone's kind of different. Like, they kind of remind me of the subreddit NYC Influencer Snark, which I do peruse a lot. But they're, like, calling out influencers. They are posting screenshots of knitting podcasters and influencers. They're talking about Joanne, the craft store, filing for bankruptcy. Like, talk to me about the tone of Craft Snark. What do you like about it? What do you hate about it? What's the vibe?
Yeah, I do think like the Circle Jerk subreddit is making fun of Craft Snark, because a lot of the posts in like, you know, Craft Snark are kind of an offshoot of like influencer snark subreddits where people are just ruthless and, you know, treating these influencers like they're not people, nitpicking every single detail of their lives, except in this case, it's about fiber arts, which I think is hilarious. People are so passionate about this hobby and just so precious about it in the weirdest possible ways.
It's so personal, which is like funny, because when you think about crafting and just like the ethos of it, I always thought that the beauty of it was that you could kind of separate the art from the artist a little bit of like, forget who made it. Look at this beautiful chair. And it is funny that we are now talking about subreddits where they are not talking about the stitch, they're talking about the bitch. And I find that so interesting. Like, in a weird way, do you ever observe like a little parasocial relationship happening?
Oh my God, absolutely. I mean, I definitely have like, I think, developed parasocial relationships. My favorite like crafters, I will see them getting embroiled in some feud and be like, ugh, so disappointed in them, like as if I knew them personally, you know? And I think part of it is because, yeah, it's a hobby, you know? It's so personal. It's like you are looking for them for inspiration for your next project. And when they fuck up, you're like, oh, you're getting canceled. Can I ethically finish this sweater that I'm already more than halfway through?
Yeah. So I think let's get into it. You know, this episode is vaguely titled The Five Funniest and Messiest Dramas That You, Morgan, Have Found on Knitting and Crocheting Reddit. So let's start here. Morgan, what is your first moment of scandal or drama?
So the first one I thought of off the top of my head, this is like a general one, but it's always the acrylic yarn versus natural wools debate. This is like the discourse that just continues to circulate on Instagram and TikTok and like YouTube and like every forum, right? And at this point, it's kind of become a meme. There's a lot of, I guess, bias against using acrylic yarn because it's cheap and it feels bad to use, but it's great for beginners and it's great if you don't have a lot of money. Like when I first started crocheting, I wasn't going off and buying like expensive ass wool. I was like going to Joann's and picking up the like giant discount value, big twist, you know, colors. Because I was like, there's a lot of colors. It's fun to use. Then you see people being like, those mass produced brands are terrible. And like, they're so shitty. And you're not a real crafter unless you're using like hand spun indie dyed yarn that costs like $30 a skein. And I'm like, okay, there's no winning ever. Like, you will never be able to win this. So the acrylic versus natural debate is always going to happen. The funniest takes I've seen is like, people being like, well, if you refuse to use acrylic yarn, you're a classist. And then other people being like, well, I have sensory issues, so I can't use acrylic yarn. And like, I'm offended that you're, you know, this is not about me specifically. And then there's another tier of being like, if you use acrylic yarn, you like are single-handedly destroying the environment because you're knitting with plastic. And it's like, guys, we're knitting. Come on. You see the worst possible takes about like the kind of yarn you use.
I love that we're starting off so strong. Okay, yeah. Morgan, what is your next moment?
My next moment is Hope McCulley. So she is a knitwear designer, and the drama around her is that she makes these super chunky, very colorful, like fun color block sweaters that sell for like hundreds of dollars on Revolve. But she makes them using roving, and roving is basically like chunks of loose wool that you would use either in like weaving, or like you would use it to like spin into actual yarn, but it's all loose. It's like, you know, if you pull at it, you'll pull out like tufts of wool. But she makes these really chunky sweaters using roving and then charges hundreds of dollars for it. And the thing about roving is like you can't wash it, you know, it's just like loose fiber basically. So she charges a ton. People are already upset at her for that, because if you wear the sweater, it'll pill like crazy. It'll fall apart. Like you will literally be losing chunks of wool out of it. But I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, but she started charging $80 for hair bows, for crocheted hair bows that were essentially just like long crocheted chains tied into the shape of a bow, like 70 stitches, easy. It's just like long string made of yarn. Because like, yes, you should be charging for your labor. I've seen people charge that much for like a knitted hat, which, you know, is fair, or like a crocheted hat. Cause like, yeah, it takes a while to make. And I think that's completely fair. But she was charging like $80 for this like little hair bow that probably takes like 2 seconds to make. So people were pretty pissed about that. And it started this whole thing where people were just like duping her product. That was pretty spicy.
Oof. And it's only going to get spicier, because we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the Facebook of Knitting, Ravelry, and Morgan is going to recap what happened at the Fyre Fest of the Fiber Arts. And we're back. So, Morgan, before the break, you told us about the drama between acrylic versus natural yarn and the controversy surrounding knitfluencer Hope McCulley. So let's talk about your next scandal.
I don't know if you heard about Fiberfest.
No, tell me.
So this is last year. It's really called the Woolen Folk Festival, but everyone called it Fiberfest because it was a shit show. It has happened before. It's like an offshoot of this other wool festival in upstate New York. Previous years, it was basically like you pay like $40, $50 to get in as an attendee. A lot of these vendors only really sell online because they don't have physical storefronts. And so it was like a cool place to like, you know, meet all these indie yarn dyers, like meet people who were selling hand knitted stuff. It was pretty small, went off pretty easily. Last year's though was a disaster. It was supposed to be held at this orchard upstate New York. And about 2 months before the festival was supposed to happen, the permitting board or whatever was like, okay, you want a space for 3,000 people. This orchard cannot handle that. Like they can handle like 2,000 people at most. Mm-hmm. And so the organizers are like, cool, cool, cool. We're finding somewhere else. And so a month before the festival was supposed to take place, they basically found this like artist space, event space. And they're like, this is where the festival is going to be. And everyone was like, cool. And so vendors were paying like $800 to $900 just to be able to sell their products there at this festival. And so they're expecting like, you know, like a nice space, a decent space. So the vendors get there the day before the festival is supposed to start. And it turns out they're not allowed inside the space. They're all expected to just set up tents outside on this like gravel parking lot. Another issue is like the organizers promised that the event would be like handicap accessible, but they're all in this like outdoor gravel parking lot. There's clearly not enough space for all of these vendors. It turns out the space, like according to the website, like can only hold like 300 people, and they sold 2,500 tickets, and that's not including the vendors. So it's already pretty bad. Apparently, allegedly, they never updated the vendor contracts to say that it would be hosted in a new space. And the day before the festival, the vendors show up. There's like no information about parking or check-in. They're just told to like set up tents outside and good luck. Then it starts raining and they're all outside. Some of them are like set up on a slope. They are still told they can't go inside. They're just all outside and wool can't get wet. It'll shrink. It'll get all like warped. It'll be disgusting. So they're all outside. They're all struggling to like keep their products dry. they're in this like outdoor parking lot. There aren't enough bathrooms. There are no ramps. So people who use like mobility devices are like slipping everywhere. They're falling. Someone said like they saw a woman with like walkers falling over into the mud. They're calling it Mud City. It's already disastrous. And then because they didn't have enough parking there, they told all the attendees to park at like a nearby Walmart that was like a 30-40 minute walk away, and that they would bus people into the event. But people started parking at Walmart and couldn't find the shuttles. So they were just like trudging through mud trying to get to this event, or like trying to illegally park around this event. Apparently like the local police department was called at one point because there were so many parking violations. All the vendors like shipped their product there ahead of time in like cardboard boxes. And the event space was like, oh yeah, yeah, put your cardboard boxes there. Like you can just like store them there. And at the end of the event, when they went to go like look for their cardboard boxes, apparently they're all gone because the event coordinators took the boxes, broke them down, and tried to like make these cardboard walkways on top of the gravel so that people stopped sliding around so much. So vendors were like, how am I supposed to get my product back? We couldn't even break even. It was a disaster. And that's how they started calling it Fiberfest. The event coordinators like went on a tirade on Instagram, started blaming each other, kind of blaming vendors for not being prepared for the weather. Eventually they put out like an apology, probably because a PR person told them to.
That is so funny. Now, what is the next moment/scandal you have for us?
The next one is 2022's pattern testing drama. So I don't know if you're familiar with like pattern testing. It's basically when like knitting and crochet designers develop a pattern and then they give it out for free to people who apply. Before they actually sell it, they're like, oh, we need people to like test this and make sure that it can like scale across different sizes and make sure that it can be like replicated with different kinds of yarn. So it's like, if I make a sweater, I want to make sure that the pattern I'm writing can be recreated by someone else.
Yeah. And it's something kind of like, you're going to do 2 loops of blue, then 3 loops of green. They kind of tell you via numbers how many loops of yarn you should use.
Yeah. Pattern testing usually involves someone like getting a pattern for free that they would usually pay like $9 to $15 for, but getting it for free, making the product or trying to make the product, and then giving the designer notes and feedback on whether or not it worked, what didn't work, and then, you know, taking photos for the designer to use like in their own notes or in their own marketing. And so this creator who goes by I'd Knit That made a TikTok calling out designers for expecting people to test patterns for free instead of actually paying them. She made points. She claimed that these designers were making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month off of these patterns and passive income, which is probably not true. Like, I don't, being in knitting, unless you're Hope McCauley, is not a particularly like lucrative industry.
It's a side hustle at best. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's a lot of it is like, you know, a labor of love. A lot of people are like making things because they like it and they're passionate about it. And then being like, maybe other people want to do it. Maybe they want to give me $9 to do it themselves, you know? And around the same time, she did a live with another creator called Ocean Knits, where they basically like complained about this and like made comments about like ugly patterns or like patterns not working that a lot of people perceived as a dig at another knitting creator, another like knitfluencer. Right around that time, another creator called Kara's Knit, she put out an announcement being like, hey, I'm looking for people to test my patterns. And she has a lot of followers. Like she has like over 100,000 followers on Instagram. And this started this whole like debate on like Instagram and like Reddit and TikTok where people were like taking sides. They all unfollowed each other. It wasn't that serious though. It's they're valid points all around. But guys, like, come on. Why are we arguing over $9 patterns?
Yeah. And I feel like maybe the reason why this went from moment to scandal is because anytime a hobby community has to meet the reality of capitalism and monetization and just the influencer spiral, they have to confront this idea of like, if you're going to start charging for labor, tell me how much my labor is worth. And I just think a lot of people, especially if they're still in that cloud of like, I knit for fun, like I just knit scarves for my dog, like they don't want to talk about it and they shouldn't have to. But when you push that conversation to the forefront of being like, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about sweatshops. Let's talk about this. And it's like, okay, I was literally here just to have a good time. And now I'm getting attacked about plushy animals.
Yeah, literally. It's like once you start to monetize any hobby, it becomes significantly less fun.
Yes. Oh, so true. Okay. Your last moment. Bring it home for us, Morgan.
This is something that I learned about like on one of the crafting Reddits. This is about the time that an indie yarn dyer faked her own death. What? Because she couldn't keep up with orders. So I learned about this through this like 4-year-old Reddit post. This really set the stage for a lot of knitting and crafting drama of today. So this happens back in like the early 2000s, 2006 to 2008, largely pre-social media. I think it blew up so much because Ravelry had just opened to the public. For the longest time, Ravelry was like waitlist only. And I think this is like right around when Ravelry was like public and people were making accounts and people were starting to like get really into the knitting crocheting forums. So back in like 2006 or 2007, there's this indie yarn dyer. It's called Mystical Creations Yarn. It's this woman named Danielle who starts this company and she kind of blows up. She's on like a few like knitting podcasts. She's like very active on Ravelry. People get like really into her yarns. So she blows up and like there's like standard crafting drama where people will comment on her Ravelry and be like, hey, like I ordered this yarn that was really expensive and I just don't like it. You know, that's like standard, you know, like whatever. In late 2007, people start complaining that they put orders in and never received them. She's kind of quiet. She has her shop open. So she's still like getting money from it. But people are like, hey, I never got my product. What's up with that? And usually it's too late to like open a claim with PayPal. So they're kind of just like hoping that they'll get it. And then in like February of 2008, someone posts on Ravelry claiming that the owner, Danielle, has been like hospitalized and that her family is scrambling to fulfill all of her orders. And they're like, don't worry, guys, Danielle will be back to dyeing yarn and like shipping it out as soon as she's out of the hospital. And everyone's like, oh, damn, well, feel better, Danielle. Really hope I get my yarn. And, you know, some customers also get like an email allegedly from Danielle's family members where the family members are like, hey, we're Danielle's family. We're like emailing all our customers. Like she's really sick and, you know, we're dealing with it, whatever. Don't worry, you'll get your yarn. And then in March, like a random poster named Susan pops into the thread and says, Danielle has been diagnosed with leukemia. It doesn't look good. And her family is hosting a like all the yarn must go sale. Like they're trying to just get rid of her whole stock. And they're like, yeah, like she's been in the hospital for the last 6 months. Like she's really, really sick, guys. It's terminal. It's really bad. And people are like, okay, weird. Some people start responding back to the emails that they're getting and like say that they've been getting responses supposedly from Danielle's like brother and sister, where the brother and sister are like, yeah, like it's just not looking good. Like, oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. May not get your yarn. And then the next day, her distributor in Europe says that Danielle is not in the hospital, that she just talked to Danielle. The European distributor is like, oh, her brother died years before. She doesn't have a sister. You're just responding to Danielle. And so people start reporting her to like the Better Business Bureau. Apparently there's like a case open with the FBI, like fraud unit. And like, they're like, we're reporting her to the Attorney General of New Mexico, where she's based. And then a few days later, customers get an email, like supposedly from Danielle's sister, being like, guys, Danielle died. Margaret writes, I can hardly talk slash write right now as I am crying so hard. Mom just called from the hospital and Danielle has just passed away. No one believes this. 2 weeks later, someone in the thread posts that there's no way Danielle is dead because someone she knows just spoke to her on the phone that day, and that a former employee of her company, of the yarn company, is like selling the stock on Etsy. And the employee says that she saw Danielle at Walmart. So they start calling this like mystery person who's like responding on Danielle's behalf or in her memory or whatever, the helper. So in May that year, someone posts about the helper. This is what they say. I thought the helper should know that a woman claiming to be Danielle Glunt, presenting Danielle Glunt's driver's license with an address on Futures Road as proof of ID, was seen and overheard today depositing checks at a neighborhood bank. She was driving a brand new car with dealer stickers and tags on it still.
Wow.
And no, helper, I am not a defrauded customer of Mystical Creations yarn. I am, however, a fellow resident of Edgewood, New Mexico, with the misfortune to also be named Margaret. Need I mention how much your nefarious business scams have cost my business? That's the lore. Danielle never resurfaces, but allegedly is still very much alive at that point, and people never get their yarn.
Wow. I mean, Morgan, I'm sure this deep dive exercise into the greatest dramas, traumas, and scandals of knitting and crocheting have maybe changed your chemistry a little bit. But I did want to ask, you know, have these moments or communities changed your own relationship to knitting or crocheting at all?
I think it has made me more passionate about it. Oh. Because I'm like, I'll see like drama going down and I'll be like, oh, that's cool. I love this. I'm like, I feel like I'm part of something. I feel like I'm like, you know, in. So I feel like the parasocial relationship that I have developed with like knitting and crocheting isn't so much with like the creators that I follow. And it's more just with these like anonymous posters. And I'm like, I have no idea what they look like. No idea like who they are. But I know like they're into this too. And I love that.
Okay, that's the show. I want to thank Morgan Sung for coming on today's episode. We'll be back in your feed on Wednesday, so definitely subscribe. That way, you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review, an Apple or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @icymi_pod, and you can always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Sierra Spragley-Ricks, Candace Lim, and me, Rachel Hampton. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's vice president of audio. See you online.
Or at CraftSnark.